This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Bart Stupak bows out in Michigan. Andy Stern said to bow out at the SEIU. And in NOLA, Sarah Palin sets the GOP agenda.
Party of no? Nah, we're the party of hell no.
It's Wednesday and time for a straw poll edition. Make that a bendable straw poll edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us. Republicans throw the hell no gauntlet down on financial reform. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid vows to tackle immigration, then unvows. In Wisconsin, Tommy Thompson reportedly will not run against Russ Feingold. In New York, George Pataki won't challenge Kirsten Gillibrand. Upstate, Massagate metastasizes. Downstate, Adam Clayton Powell IV will test Charlie Rangel in Harlem. And we know one person who will not be nominated for the Supreme Court seat. Later, the skinny on last weekend in the Big Easy, plus Nicholas Kristof back from a family vacation in Zimbabwe. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here, as he does every Wednesday, as usual. We begin with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Okay, well, there's a lot of speculation on whom President Obama will pick for the Supreme Court opening.
Except Hillary Clinton,
right? But there's some talk about elected officials and the names of Janet Napolitano, the former Arizona governor, Jennifer Granholm, the current Michigan governor, has been named. Who was the last Supreme Court justice who ran for statewide office?
After leaving the court.
Well, what does it matter?
The last Supreme Court justice to run for political office before or
statewide,
after?
Statewide office.
If you think you know the answer, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And the winner, of course, gets a fabulous no prize T-shirt. And Ken, we actually had votes cast yesterday.
We did, but we're not sure what it amounted to. Of course, this is about extending unemployment benefits, and of course, you need 60 votes for anything to happen in the Senate. And they actually got four Republicans to vote for, including Scott Brown, once the Tea Party favorite. We're not sure if he's still the Tea Party favorite. But anyway, it was an agreement to end debate, to begin debate, basically, on extending unemployment benefits. Republicans felt they were not being paid for. There was no way to pay for it. So a lot of conservatives were opposed to it, but they got enough votes to pass it. The vote was 60 to 34. And so now they're going to debate whether to extend it. There was another preliminary vote today that they didn't get the 60 votes to pass. So
because
we don't know.
Pat Leahy wasn't there.
Well, right, Pat Leahy wasn't there. But the four Republicans are Scott Brown, George Voinovich, who's retiring, and the twins from Maine, Olympia Snow and Susan Collins. And that's the only four Republican votes they got.
So we'll have to see. The Democrats are expected to win that vote as soon as Pat Leahy returns to the Senate, as soon as this afternoon. Nevertheless, the president is going to confab with the Senate and House leadership on the question of that Supreme Court vacancy. And indeed, this is sort of pro forma. Every time there's a vacancy, they meet with the leadership and the heads of the chairman and the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee.
Right, just the Senate, not the House. Of course, it'll be Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid, and then it'll be Jeff Sessions, the ranking Republican on Judiciary, and Pat Leahy, the chairman. Of course, with John Paul Stevens announcing his retirement, not a surprise last week after 34 years on the bench. We expect that there'll be some kind of a nominee perhaps by the end of May. And of course, the likely candidates we've heard over and over again are the Solicitor General Elena Kagan and two Federal Appeals Court judges, Merrick Garland from D.C. and Diane Wood of Chicago. Diane Wood, by the way, was my prediction last year when it was ultimately went to Sonia Sotomayor. So, but there may be a very longer list. The White House is hinting that they may be the Jennifer Granholms and the Jen Napolitanos, other judges. Of course, some progressive liberal groups would like somebody more liberal, less mainstream. But it depends on how President Obama wants to weigh in and how much of a fight he wants to have with the Republicans. I suspect either way there's going to be a fight. The question is whether he wants to have it extend to something as far as a filibuster.
And indeed, the president ducked a fight with his nominee to head the Office of Legal Counsel at the Justice Department. And she bowed out, fell on her sword after a year in nomination because apparently the president didn't want two fights with Republicans on judicial questions.
Right. That's Dawn Johnson of the University of Indiana Law School. And also, there's also a judgeship up in San Francisco for the Ninth Circuit. That's basically a big fight. What Harry Reid says is what he really wants to get done in the next couple of weeks is really deal with some of these judicial confirmation battles that the Republicans have been holding up all these months.
Well, let's see if we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question. And the question again, the last Supreme Court justice to run for statewide political office. Again, 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. And Albert joins us from Lake Havasu in Arizona.
Well,
Albert, you're on the line.
Thank you. I'm going with Sandra Day O'Connor from my state here.
Well, Sandra Day O'Connor did run for state legislature. She was a Republican leader in the state legislature before she was picked to the Supreme Court. But the question here was statewide office. That was the key.
So that was.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Nice try, though. Let's see if we go next to this is Tom. Tom with us from Sioux City, Iowa.
Earl Warren,
the former governor of California.
That's correct. He was former governor of California, but he was not the most recent person to run statewide.
Thanks very much, Tom. Let's go next. This is Casey. Casey with us from Cleveland.
I was going to guess Taft.
Which one?
From Ohio.
Well, actually, William
Howard.
William Howard Taft was never, I don't think he was ever elected statewide office.
Well, he was elected president.
He was elected president, and of course, he was Supreme Court Chief Justice, Chief Justice of the United States, but never elected statewide in Ohio.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Casey. Let's go next to, this is Bryant. Bryant with us from Grand Rapids.
Good afternoon. My guess would be Judge Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas never ran for office. No, he's always been a judge.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go next to, this is Bob. Bob with us from Rochester, Minnesota.
Hi, this is Bob from Rochester, and it's Bill Brandenburg, I believe his first name is. He ran for governor of New Jersey.
Bill Bradley ran for governor of New Jersey.
No, not Bill Bradley. Brandenburg.
Brendan Byrne? No.
He's in the right arena.
I think, yeah, right. The first Italian governor, Brendan Byrne arena. I think what we're talking about is a long, long time ago, but I'm talking about something much more recent than what you're referring to.
That's a concerto, Brandenburg. Anyway, let's see if we go next to go to Scott. Scott with us from Kansas City.
Yes, I believe Arthur Goldberg ran for New York governor in 1966.
Well, you're right about the answer. The answer is Arthur Goldberg. The year was 1970.
We're going to give it to you anyway. Ding, 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 you get a T-shirt.
Yeah, but he'll get the T-shirt 4 years later. He lost to Nelson Rockefeller. And the interesting thing is that Arthur Goldberg's running mate was Basil Paterson, who was the father of the current New York governor, David Paterson.
Interesting. Anyway, Scott, stay on hold, and our producer will pick up and get your particulars. You will get a no-prize T-shirt in exchange for the promise to have a digital picture taken of yourself that we can post on the wall of shame.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much. So I pushed the hold button for once. I got that right. Anyway, interesting. Mentioned Basil Paterson, one of the great political leaders in Harlem. And indeed, the king of Harlem for many, many years has been Charlie Rangel.
40 years.
And now he gets a challenge from a name that resonates very strongly.
Well, the person Charlie Rangel defeated in the 1970 Democratic primary was a very famous congressman by the name of Adam Clayton Powell. Now Powell's son, Adam Clayton Powell IV, not sure why he's the fourth, but he's a city councilman. He is running against Charlie Rangel in the September primary. Of course, he ran against Rangel once before in 1994 and got crushed 2-1. But obviously, Rangel is no longer Ways and Means Committee chairman. He's under a lot of ethics investigations, and perhaps he might be vulnerable to a challenge.
Staying in New York, former Governor George Pataki says he will not run for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate.
Not a surprise. I mean, his name has been out there, and his name, if you look at these polls, these hypothetical polls, Pataki, the predecessor to Governor Elliot Spitzer, and then now David Patterson. Pataki leads Kirsten Gillibrand in all the polls, but he said he's not going to run, and nobody ever thought he wanted to come to Washington.
Speaking of political comebacks that aren't, Tommy Thompson in Wisconsin.
Well, there's also a poll that shows Tommy Thompson defeating Russ Feingold in this year's Senate race, but there's a Milwaukee radio station, WTMJ, reporting unnamed sources saying people close to Tommy Thompson say he's ultimately not going to run for the Senate. Thompson has not confirmed that.
And there was an election yesterday in the state of Florida for the House of Representatives.
It was a seat that Robert Wexler gave up. He's a former congressman, a seven-term congressman from, I guess, the West Palm Beach, Boca Raton area. He's overwhelmingly reelected over and over again. He left in January to head up a Middle East think tank. It was won by another Democrat, Ted Deutsch. The Republican candidate there tried to make this a referendum against health care and against President Obama's views on Israel.
Seemed to work in some other places.
Yes, but this was not the right district to do it. The guy, Ed Lynch, the Republican, got creamed when he ran for Congress 2 years ago, and he tried to get Jewish hostility about Obama's positions on Israel to his advantage. But Ted Deutsch, who is Jewish and who is a Democrat in an overwhelmingly Democratic district, won handily.
We have some other special elections coming up.
We do have. We have a bunch of them. In May, we have three of them for Nathan Deal from Georgia, who resigned to run for governor of Georgia, Neil Abercrombie, who resigned to run for governor of Hawaii, and Jack Murtha of Pennsylvania, who died of a special election in May as well. There's also going to be a special election, we think, but we don't know when, to replace Eric Massa in upstate New York. David Patterson has to call a date, but he may not call a date. It's a very ticklish situation for David Patterson.
And
thank you.
And indeed, the Massagate continues to expand. More revelations this week that his staff was apparently spending most of their time trying to keep him out of trouble. In the end, unsuccessfully.
Right. A lot of people were giggling about this scandal, thinking it's very cute and very funny. But ultimately, it's about sexual harassment. Many male members of Massa's staff said that they were touched or they were sexually propositioned by the congressman. And the question, as was the same question that we asked of Republicans in 2006 with Tom Foley, that scandal in Florida, what members of the House leadership, Democratic leadership, knew about this? And if they knew about it earlier, what did they do about it?
And by the way, we found a copy of Ken Rudin's tech writer in our garbage here at Talk of the Nation, and it turns out he does require a Learjet and bendy straws.
Well, this is so strange. I mean, there's the college system in California, of course, is suffering financially, and apparently there were some negotiations going on to get Sarah Palin to speak there. Among the things she demanded were bendable straws.
Bendable straws. It's not quite the case of Southern comfort that some rock musicians demanded, but nevertheless, we'll talk more with Ken Rudin when we come back from a short break, and we'll focus on a who's who of the Republican Party that descended on New Orleans last week to talk about the future of the GOP. Don Gagne was there. He'll join us next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The political junkie Ken Rudin joins us every week on Talk of the Nation. He's NPR's political editor and prolific political blogger. You can head to npr.org/junkie to see that. You can also download his podcast. And if you have political brain teasers on the mind, there's the scuttle button puzzle that's there every week. Last weekend, Republicans gathered in New Orleans for the Southern Republican Leadership Conference to hear from Michael Steele, Newt Gingrich, Mike Pence, and Sarah Palin, among others, from men and women who shaped the party's platform and some of whom may have an idea, an eye on the GOP nomination for president in 2012. One of them, Ron Paul, encouraged Republicans to narrow what he called a credibility gap.
We talk a good game, but when we get the chance to do something, we haven't done the job that we should have.
At the end of the conference, there was a straw poll. Mitt Romney came out on top, barely. We want to hear from Republicans in our audience. Who's your candidate for 2012? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. NPR national political correspondent Don Gagne joins us here in Studio 3A. Don, nice to have your new title to stumble over, and welcome
you
to the program.
I've stumbled over it myself a few times.
Now, this is the first major gathering of the GOP since the health care bill passed and became law. How were they looking at that as an opportunity or as a defeat?
Oh, absolutely as an opportunity. Those words, repeal, were at, I don't think there was a speaker who did not used those words.
Did any of the speakers manage to count to the veto level?
Here is the plan they lay out. It's a multi-step process. First, you take over the House of Representatives and the Senate, this go-round. And no, they're not going to have a veto-proof majority. Even in their wildest dreams, they're not thinking of that. But they talk about starving the funding for key provisions of the bill. So they simply
chip away.
Cannot be enacted. And then 2 years later, they win the presidency. It was interesting to see Newt Gingrich talking about cutting off funding, because you think back to his time as Speaker, and cutting off funding for the government was something that actually got him into a little bit of trouble.
Kind of backfired.
Helped reelect Bill Clinton, exactly.
But anyway, it is the rallying cry for 2010, and it will be the rallying cry beyond. And they do acknowledge that President Obama has made the point, you know, that many of these things, once people see them, will be popular once people get used to having them.
And so they really think that they can campaign on the idea those pre-existing conditions that don't count anymore, we're going to put those back in.
They will not be that specific. Not be that specific, and they absolutely were not that specific at this event. It's that the bill is huge. It is costly. It is driving up the deficit. They are pointing to polls that initially show that the public hasn't, you know, warmed up to this yet. There's still, general opposition, even though, as the president points out, it hasn't really been
kicked in yet. This is the base of the Republican Party.
Yes. And even though it is called, the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, you have Republicans there from all across the country. I mean, it's essentially called that because they are the ones who host the party. But it is a chance to energize the base in a place where the base has traditionally lived.
Let's see if we get some listeners in on the conversation. A straw poll was taken at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, and the winner was
a surprise. Somebody who didn't even bother to show up, Mitt Romney.
And who came in second?
Ron Paul came in second, but we have to say it was a virtual tie. They each had 24%. I think Romney's vote total, it was 439 votes. And Ron Paul's vote total was 438. And then the next tier, again, a tie, Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin, each with 18%. Then nobody else broke double digits.
Ken?
Don, you were talking about enthusiasm and excitement. Could you compare just briefly the comparison between the reception Sarah Palin got and Michael Steele got?
Sarah Palin was really the big speaker of the weekend. No surprise there. She's the one who sells tickets. She's the draw. And she is the rock star. So the room was sold out, really standing room only, 3,000, maybe 4,000 people squeezed into that room, and raucous applause for her. Michael Steele was the last speaker of the last day. He spoke at about 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, after 3 days. And Ron Paul spoke just before him. And Ron Paul had a full house as well. But the place didn't completely empty out. It was probably a third to half full for Michael Steele when he spoke.
I read somewhere that a lot of fundraisers, a lot of big givers of the party decided to leave when Michael Steele started to speak. Do you know anything about that?
Nothing specifically. I'd heard that there as well. But certainly the place was absolutely full before he spoke. There was just a very short break after Ron Paul's speech. And I went out into the hallway, did some interviews, this and that, gathered some tape and came back in, and the place was half full.
Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. We're asking Republicans to call in today and say, if you had a straw poll today, who would you vote for? Norm is on the line from Portsmouth in New Hampshire.
When I look at the stage at this point in time, I think Tim Pawlenty is the right guy.
Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota. And
exactly.
What recommends him to you, Norm?
Well, he's got the kind of executive experience that I think would play well in the White House. And I think he brings it, coming from New Hampshire, I mean, I'd even say that I think he brings some Midwestern common sense with the out-of-control spending that has overtaken Washington and the government overreach. I think he'd put a
put the brakes on that quickly.
All right. Thanks very much, Norm. And Tim Pawlenty, Don Gagne, he decided to stay home to welcome units of the Minnesota National Guard that were coming back from overseas and skip this event.
I spoke via videotape, a pre-taped message that isn't quite the same. He records it in a room and there's no audience and nobody for him to react to. And I think he spoke for something like 2 minutes and 56 seconds. So it was kind of a courtesy call, but he felt he couldn't be there in person.
Let's go next to Bill. Bill with us from Norwich in Connecticut.
How you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you.
That's a good thing. My pick, of course, would be the person who was almost totally ignored in 2008, and that would be Ron Paul, because Ron Paul would follow the Constitution, unlike all the others that have been out there so far.
Don Gagne mentioned that Ron Paul, once the Libertarian Party candidate for president of the United States, did great fundraising in his last time when he ran for the Republican nomination. Did not get a lot of votes, though he did extremely well raising money on the internet, and gave one of the more interesting speeches. Don has provided us with a couple of cuts of tape from Ron Paul's address to the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. And Bill, you may be interested to hear this. He was talking about, he was critical of planks in the Republican platform and about GOP talking points.
The question has been raised is whether or not our president is a socialist. And I am sure there's some people here that believe it, and I know this conference has talked about that already, and I think it's very important, and he deserves a lot of criticism. But, you know, in the technical sense, in the economic definition of what a socialist, no, he's not a socialist. What he is a corporatist. And unfortunately, we have corporatists in the Republican Party, and that means you take care of corporations, and corporations take over and run the country.
And as you mentioned, he came within a vote on the straw poll, but you could hear those remarks sticking in a few people's craws.
And throughout his speech, you'd hear the occasional shout-out in opposition from the audience, and he would just get kind of a sly smile in the corner of his mouth, knowing that he had riled them up, and he would plow forward. I mean, those are his favorite moments, you can tell.
Ron Paul also asked the audience if they'd ever heard of a place called Kyrgyzstan.
There was a revolution over there. Why was it important? Because we have an air base there. Why do we have to have air bases in the Soviet satellites? Besides, we're running out of money. No matter how badly you would like to have them, all empires end, not because they're defeated militarily, all empires end for financial reasons, and that is what the markets are telling us today.
You could almost see former Vice President Dick Cheney trying to launch something.
Exactly.
Or go hunting with him.
Or go hunting. Invite him to go out hunting, indeed.
And the crowd that you can hear, they packed the place. A lot of college kids. I talked to a group of college kids from Ole Miss and some from Florida and some from Georgia had come in. And that is how he wins these straw polls. Young people get energized. They pay the basic conference registration fee. They go to the straw poll. And it really is his base.
And Ken Rudin, again, Ron Paul got a lot of support, a lot of money last time, got few votes. His son, however, is a very much a viable candidate.
That's exactly
this time
what I was thinking right now. We always talk about the potential of Ron Paul in 2008. That was never realized, certainly not with votes, but in the latest Bluegrass poll in the Kentucky Republican senatorial primary, which is coming May 18th for the seat that Jim Bunning is giving up, Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, who's a doctor, leads the establishment choice, Trey Grayson, who's elected Secretary of State, by 15 points in that primary. So, I mean, Rand Paul is doing all the things that Ron Paul did, internet fundraising and all that stuff, but he's also touching a nerve with the voters in Kentucky.
And by the way, here's a clip of tape that we missed earlier when it was relevant. This is a cut of tape of Trey Grayson, a spot that ran in Kentucky during March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament.
There are big differences between Rand Paul and me. But in Kentucky during March, there's one really big difference.
I'm Rand Paul, and I'm a Kentucky Devil.
I'm proud to say that I'm a University of Kentucky Wildcat. I'm Trey Grayson, and I approve this message because I will always cheer for the Big Blue.
And you couldn't quite hear that cut of tape. It said, I'm Rand Paul, and I'm a Duke Blue Devil, which, of course, could get him in some trouble in the state of Kentucky. Though, of course, Duke did win. So, anyway, let's see if we get another caller on the line. Let's go next to, this is Jerry. Jerry with us from Concord in Massachusetts.
Hello?
Hi, who's your Republican candidate?
Well, it has to be Mitt Romney. Not that I want him to be, but he's the only one close enough to the middle to win.
Only one close enough to the middle to win. You think he can attract the votes of independents, maybe some Democrats?
Well, I don't know, but no one else could do it better. And the ticket that would be best for the country, the two people who would really be best for the country, aren't going to run. So,
and who would those be?
Well, I'll tell you, and you'll think I'm kidding, but I'm serious. I think a nice combination of Jack Welch, formerly of GE, and Oprah Winfrey would bring the country together.
If they could decide to talk to each other. Well, she could interview him. Anyway, thanks very much for the call, Jerry. That's a little bit out there, but we'll have to see if that becomes a possibility in some third or fourth party. Ken?
Well, I was going to say, and Kitty Kelly for Secretary of State.
Let's see. But the idea of former governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, is he somebody who can, is he in the center of American politics? Is he to the, I know he'd hate me to characterize it this way, to the left of some of the other candidates in the Republican Party?
Well, he wasn't in 2008, and the problem with Mitt Romney, I always thought that he had a chance of winning the nomination had he used his business acumen to sell himself to Republican voters. But I remember when he ran for governor of Massachusetts, when he ran for the Senate against Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, he was pro-choice, he was pro-gay rights, things like that. And then he moved way to the right on abortion, on same-sex marriage, things like that when he ran for president. The question is, which is the real Mitt Romney and whether we'll see it in 2012?
It's Wednesday. We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. Also with us is Don Gagne, now national political correspondent. See, I got it out that time with no stumbles whatsoever. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR. Our news. Let's go next to Sheila. Sheila with us from DePoyster in New York.
Hi. None of them are my candidates, and I'll tell you why, because I would like to see Republicans stop blaming everybody else for their problems. I hear a lot about personal responsibility, but I see them blaming the media for everything that comes out or any disagreement. And the other part that bothers me is the things with Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity deciding who is an American and who isn't. I'm married to a Democrat, and he's a veteran of a war. I find him very American, and it's insulting to me and my family values that because he's not of that ilk, the very conservative Republican, mm-hmm. or me for that matter, that we're suddenly un-American. So until one of them speaks up about that, and I know they won't, I guess so far I haven't found one.
Sheila, thanks very much for the call. And, of course, she was referring to the Fox News hosts there, Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck. And to what degree in a Republican leadership conference do people like that set the agenda?
Well, it was a very conservative conference, and it seemed every speaker, save Ron Paul and maybe Rick Perry, the Texas governor, spent a good bit of time talking about President Obama as a socialist and about, Newt Gingrich used the phrase over and over and over that the president is running a secular socialist machine. And Sarah Palin certainly goes there. So the rhetoric was very, very much red meat and kind of aimed at keeping the anger up and doing that to kind of fuel the energy that they see out there. But when you get down to debating health care, if it's going to live in the details, it's harder to portray things that way.
Let's get another caller in. This is Matt. Matt with us from Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I was wondering if Newt Gingrich was a possible candidate since he happened to work well with Democrats during the Clinton years and seemed to have the contract for America down pretty well.
Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the House of Representatives and now a historical novelist. Ken Rudin, is Newt Gingrich a viable candidate for
president?
Well,
his name has been out there, and it's been out there for a long, long time. He says he'll have a decision perhaps by next spring. Ultimately, I think he does not run, but there are a lot of people who work with him with GOPAC when he was Speaker of the House. A guy named Joe Gaylord is basically setting the stage for possible Gingrich candidacy. I think he has a lot of problems with the base of the party, his own personal life that has to be dealt with, scandals in the closet, things like that. But anyway, there is a movement out there for Gingrich. Announcements will probably be made by next spring.
Thanks very much, Fred. Matt, appreciate the phone call. Let's see if we get one last caller in. And this is Mike. Mike with us from Greenville in North Carolina.
I'm for Haley Barbour.
Haley Barbour, the governor of Mississippi, former chairman of the Republican National Committee. Haley Barbour, was he at this conference?
He was current chairman of the Republican Governors Association. And Haley Barbour is certainly toying with a run, but he asked that his name not be included
in the straw poll.
In the straw poll. Why put your name in there and perhaps not do well and have to explain it, even if it's meaningless? But he had the message, folks, let's focus on 2010. He says we have to remember what matters.
Ken?
Also, he was in the news this week. He also proclaimed Confederate Heritage Month in Mississippi this week. And when he was asked about the controversy when Bob McDonald, the Virginia governor, did the same thing, he said, well, the whole controversy doesn't amount to diddly. I think Haley Barbour, everybody loves him. He speaks his mind.
Kind enough to join us on this program.
Right. And that's one of the reasons he probably will not run for president.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much for your time today. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, joins us every week on the Political Junkie segment. Our thanks as well to NPR's national political correspondent, Don Gagne, also with us here in 3A, just back from New Orleans. Don, thanks very much for your time today.
Always glad to be here.